more than they could count when they threw them in trucks. Some children were kneeling, the saints were all calm. Checkers and gunshots reveal all the blood. Oh, great cave of smoke, oh, children of stones. What beautiful birth, so short as a rose.
Good evening. You are tuned to Bread and Roses. And I'm your host, Carol Scholl. Tonight, we present a special Cinco de Mayo event exploring human rights work in Mexico. First, we have an interview with Amigos de las Mujeres, a group based in New Mexico, working to bring justice in the cases of 400 women who've been murdered in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, and Chihuahua, Mexico. About half past the hour, we'll learn about Digna Ochoa, a renowned human rights activist murdered in 2001 in Mexico. And we'll be interviewing quite a well-known journalist, Canadian journalist, Linda Dibel, whose new book, Betrayed, tells the story of Digna Ochoa and the cover-up of her assassination. And, of course, we'll have music by Lila Downs. This track is called Octel.
For justice, but will there be goodness when men kill their own? Our wise people
justice.
Say that the mouth of the earth.
Justice, not excuses. Every 2 seconds, somewhere in the world, a woman is subjected to violence. At least one in three women have been beaten, coerced into sex, or otherwise abused in her lifetime. In Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua, Mexico, over 400 women and girls have been killed or disappeared in the past 13 years. An alarming number of these cases remain unsolved. Federal authorities in Mexico acknowledge that 177 state officials did indeed act negligently. Not one of them has been brought to justice. On the air tonight, we are going to be joined by Cynthia Bejarano. She is co-founder of a group in New Mexico called Amigos de las Mujeres, and we'll be speaking to her from New Mexico. Cynthia, are you online? And our engineers are playing with the buttons here, seeing if we can get Cynthia up and speaking. The group is called Amigos de las Mujeres, and they've been working with the families of some of the victims in Ciudad Juarez, as well as working to bring keep this case open and get some news out about what's happening in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua, Mexico. So, Cynthia, are you on the line now? And we'll have them keep playing with that. What's been happening? There's been some news this week, some movement. Right now, Amnesty International is seeking people to write to the state governor of Chihuahua in Mexico and I'm going to read their statement. Tell the state governor of Chihuahua to strengthen measures to prevent and prosecute the disappearance and murder of women and girls in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua City. You can go online to the Amnesty International website. And on that website, you'll find a bunch of resources. They have postcards. They have like email petitions, that sort of thing. And it's when you get into the Amnesty International website, you click on the Stop Violence Against Women icon, and you'll find all the information there. It's an alarming story if you haven't heard it before. And it's one that is quite worrisome, with over 400 women and girls killed or disappeared in the past 13 years in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua, Mexico. And one more time, I'll see if Cynthia is online. So, Cynthia Bejarano?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry about that. We had a little technical glitch there.
That's okay.
All right. And for our listeners, this is Cynthia Bejarano of Amigos de las Mujeres, based in New Mexico. And which part of New Mexico?
We're in Las Cruces, New Mexico, about 50 miles from the El Paso Juarez border.
Uh-huh. So you're actually quite close to the border.
Very close. This is we're part of the borderlands down here.
And could you give our listeners here in Portland, Oregon, a little information about your organization, Amigos de las Mujeres?
Sure. We're a nonprofit organization that started up in the fall of 2001 to assist some of the families of the murdered women in Ciudad Juarez and in Chihuahua City. And what we do is we offer funding, opportunities, logistical support, emotional support to many of the families that we work with. And we primarily work with family-based organizations.
And you work with the organizations then across the border?
Right, right. The family-based organizations we work with are located in Ciudad Juarez, which is directly across from El Paso, Texas, and Chihuahua City, which is about 3 hours south of the El Paso-Ciudad Juarez border. And they are organizations that are primarily made up of the families and more particularly the mothers of the murdered women from Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua.
Okay, and Cynthia, can you just give us a little background on your involvement in co-founding this organization, Amigos de las Mujeres?
Sure. I've been involved in this situation for about 8 years now. I first got word of the femicides. I'm from the El Paso, Ciudad Juarez area, and I was just horrified that these occurrences were taking place, these murders of young women. I was living in Arizona at the time, and I returned back to southern New Mexico in 2001 and had since then befriended a family that organized and founded an organization called Voices Without Echo out of Ciudad Juarez. Their daughter had been killed in 1998. Her name was Sagrario Gonzalez. And at that point, myself and Greg Bloom, who's no longer with the group, but helped to organize and began our organization. Sally Meisenhelder was another co-founder. And basically, we just saw the need to continue to assist families, NGOs, advocates, activists in the Ciudad Juarez area because they'd been receiving several death threats, harassing calls and intimidation tactics by authorities, by law enforcement, city and state police. And so we felt that we had to do something. So several years later, here we are. We've raised close to $70,000 for the organizations, and the organizations we work with are Nuestras Hijas de Regreso a Casa, based out of Ciudad Juarez, Justicia para Nuestras Hijas, based out of Chihuahua City, and Casa Amiga, the only rape crisis center in Ciudad Juarez. And as a product of the group in Chihuahua City, another organization has newly formed called Centro de Derechos Humanos para la Mujer, the Center for Women's Human Rights, basically out of Chihuahua City. So we keep very active, very involved. Women continue to disappear, not just in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua City, but now there are traces of femicides in other areas of Mexico. And, of course, there's been this epidemic of femicides in Guatemala as well.
Yeah, I was just reading about that. I was quite surprised. I had known about the situation in Ciudad Juarez and then reading also about it in Guatemala. It's horrific. It really is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. Yes.
Yes. It's great to know that you guys are out there at least helping the families and getting the issue, keeping it alive. Is there some recent news? I mean, good news that's coming out, some movement in terms of prosecution?
Well, good news on this side of the border in the United States. Back in 2003, Congresswoman Hilda Solis from L.A., organized and led a delegation, a congressional delegation of Hispanic caucus members to Ciudad Juarez. And she's been working diligently for 3 years to pass a Juarez resolution. Just a few days ago, the House of Representatives unanimously approved House Concurrent Resolution 90, introduced by Congresswoman Solis, and she's been working on this for 3 years now, and it was finally unanimously passed, so we're ecstatic about that. In addition, Senator Jeff Bingaman from New Mexico also introduced a Senate concurrent resolution 16, and that just passed yesterday. So this is really big news. These are activities, these are bits of resolutions that have been introduced and will hopefully continue to help us in our struggle to maintain the need for some sort of binational set of investigations or a binational commission to investigate the crimes. So we're really excited about that. We've been pushing this this resolution for a very long time. We just received word from Congresswoman Solis 2 days ago, and the groups in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua and the families are ecstatic about this very monumental move. And finally, the U.S. is acknowledging the femicides taking place at the border. I've mentioned often that El Paso and Ciudad Juarez are joined together by an umbilical cord, because really you're crossing over one concrete bridge to get to the other side of the border, which is basically Mexico or the U.S., depending on where you're standing from. And we're so connected, our communities. I imagine it's hard for other communities across the U.S. to understand sort of the climate and border communities, but we are so interconnected. And the femicides that take place in Ciudad Juarez are also affecting El Paso and southern New Mexico, where we reside.
And again, that is Congresswoman Hilda Solis, and that she, after 3 long years, was able to pass this Juarez resolution. What is the text, or briefly, if you could explain about the resolution a little more?
Sure. Basically, the resolution, and again, she came down, she led this delegation in 2003, and I remember how heartfelt and that visit was. She was able to sit with families of the murdered women and girls and hear about their cases one-on-one, and she was so moved by it. I remember it as though it was yesterday, and I really appreciate her perseverance on this issue. But the resolution is asking for binational cooperation between the U.S. and Mexico to help bring an end to the murders of women in Ciudad Juarez and closure to their families. I know Congresswoman Solis has worked with other organizations in the U.S., like the Washington Office on Latin America, Mexican Solidarity Network, Latin American Working Group, that are all based out of Washington, to further discussions on DNA testing. And because of her spearheading this initiative, along with some of the local grassroots organizations like ourselves and these Washington-based groups, we were able to last year convince the state government of Chihuahua to bring in a neutral party, an Argentine anthropological forensic team, to begin exhuming the bodies of many of these young women, because of the lack of investigations, the amount of impunity that's been circulating in Ciudad Juarez. Many of these women's bodies were not positively identified. Some of the bodies were presented to family members as though they were the remains of a family's daughter, and yet later it was found that, in fact, they had buried the wrong person. So there were countless cases like this that were taking effect, and the Argentine group that came in has helped over the past several months, close to a year, to help actually positively identify the bodies and give some closure and peace of mind to the families that have been working so hard on these issues to raise awareness, to bring the femicides into an international spotlight. And I can guarantee you that the only reason that we've made these advances is because of the international attention. The more that the U.S. becomes involved, the more bodies we can positively identify and bring some peace of mind to the families that have been just painstakingly involved in this. They've invested everything. Some of the families have invested their own money to investigate their daughter's crimes because of the lack of impunity and the level of corruption are so incredibly high in the state of Chihuahua and throughout Mexico and other places. And now you see it in Guatemala, that the families have very, very few recourses. And so that's what we're trying to work toward, and that's why the resolution by Congresswoman Solis and Senator Jeff Bingaman have been so salient to this cause.
Yeah, it sounds actually quite heroic that she kept plugging away at trying to get this binational cooperation, this resolution that states that just over the years, and yourself.
She really has. I admire her greatly because the families of the murdered women, when groups come in from outside of Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua, and they feel that these organizations and legislators and other people with power can come in and hear their stories, the family's parting words are always, please do not abandon us.
And
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It's very emotional. It's a very emotional issue. It's emotionally charged. And I remember as though it was yesterday when, Congresswoman Solis, in private and with her staff and with other people leading the delegation like myself said, something needs to be done. And she was moved, to tears, and the families were moved to tears, and just the words, the lingering words that have stayed with all of us. It's so difficult to turn away from this issue. And young women continued to disappear. Last week when I was in Portland at the General Amnesty International meetings, in the U.S., I was flying on a plane with a reporter, journalist, Diana Washington Valdez, who wrote a book called The Harvesting of Women, documenting the history of the femicides at the border here in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua. And she pointed to a photograph of a young woman in a local newspaper based out of Ciudad Juarez, where there was a photograph of a young woman who was a teacher that had been missing for exactly a year last Friday. Prior to that, we had a very large social justice symposium here in Las Cruces, New Mexico last month to discuss and update people on the femicides in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua. And in 1 week, we were told of a young woman who was found dead close to the International Bridge. And we also saw a photograph that was posted in one of the local newspapers of a missing young woman. So it's imperative that people outside of the border area recognize that this is an ongoing issue. Women and young girls continue to disappear. There are countless theories pointing to what is happening with these femicides, what is sort of instigating them, why is there this level of continuity and death, and why is it far-reaching? Why is it extending into other areas of Mexico and Guatemala? And it's important for people to, outside of this area, to educate themselves on what's happening here. Unfortunately, I think so many people locally have become so numb to this type of violence. It's just another ongoing occurrence of violence that exists here at the border, primarily in Ciudad Juarez, that people don't want to hear about it anymore. And unfortunately, our local paper in El Paso has, for the most part, refused to cover the stories. They've refused to cover the updates and the information on the femicides. Just last month, probably the first or second largest conference dealing with the femicides in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua in the U.S. was not covered by the local newspapers. So it's really unsettling to be here and feel like you're fighting this fight and trying to gain momentum around this issue. And people feel so defeated here. People feel as though nothing is going to change. And that's why it's so important for your audiences to listen to this plea of mine to support this cause and to get on the internet and educate themselves about the organizations I've mentioned and our own organization, and to ask hard-hitting questions to even our own congressional members. Thank those that did sign on to these two resolutions, but also ask, what's the next step? This is just one critical phase in years and years of mobilizing and grassroots efforts, and we need all the support we can have.
If you've just joined us, I'm speaking to Cynthia Bejarano, and she works at the University of New Mexico, and she is the co-founder of a group called Amigos de las Mujeres, which has been tirelessly working to help the families of the 400 murdered women in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua, Mexico, and now in Guatemala. What can people do? Here in Oregon, there is that problem of feeling quite isolated and far away from what's happening on the border. But what are some ways that people can help out?
I think the first step is just to educate oneself, first and foremost, to get on the internet, look up some of these websites. Our organization is the closest to the border that's U.S.-based. Again, it's called Amigos de las Mujeres de Juarez, and our website address is amigosdemujeres.org, and we're located in Las Cruces, New Mexico. I'm actually at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces. But that's the first step. Find out what other organizations are doing. One thing that the organizations, the groups we work with in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua constantly need are funds. Through our organization, we've managed to provide funding to cover the cost of rent for some organizations, for two now, in fact, for Nuestras Hijas de Regreso a Casa and Centro de Derechos Humanos de la Mujer. People, students, community members can show the film Señorita Extraviada, Missing Woman, by Lourdes Portillo, a San Francisco-based filmmaker, and raise proceeds for the organizations that we work with. Our organization also makes pins that very simply state Amigos de las Mujeres de Juarez, or Stop the Violence, Stop the Killing Against Women. And we use what's become the universal symbol to remember the women, which is a pink backdrop and a black cross. And that design was created by some of the families of the murdered women with this organization I first mentioned, Voices Without Echo. They came up with this design to remember their daughters. And so that has just spread like wildfire. We've had so many wonderful fundraisers, and we've had students from across the country asked to sell these pins or make them themselves. It's a very novice idea, but it's worked wonderfully for us and has been our main fundraising staple. I mean, there's so many things people can do. You can get online and sign the petition that Amnesty International has. You can purchase postcards from the organization Justicia para Nuestras Hijas. They've come up with this project where they ask people to purchase postcards that have the photograph of a young woman that's been killed. And you basically keep one side of the postcard and you send the other side of the postcard in to the governor of Chihuahua, Jose Reyes Baeza, or to the attorney general investigating the crimes in Chihuahua, Patricia Gonzalez, or even to President Vicente Fox in Mexico City. So what's important is just to be, I think, for individual communities away from the border and at the border, to be creative and think about how you would commemorate the lives of young women that weren't able to live the life that many of us have had at this point. They had dreams. They went to school. They were working full-time. They had aspirations to go to college. And many of them were young mothers as well. And those dreams have been extinguished in a very untimely way. And so that's what we're trying to relay to people, is fundraise, spread the word, educate yourself, sign petitions, and any other creative way you can think of
All
being
right.
involved.
Cynthia Bejarano, I want to thank you for joining us tonight from New Mexico. I'm going to, at the end of the show, actually, give these websites and suggestions, such as holding a movie and sending some, doing a fundraiser for your organization. And again, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, and thank you for all your work.
Thank you for the space. We really appreciate it.
All right. Have a good evening.
Thanks.
Coming up, we will be doing an interview with Linda Dibel, whose book, Betrayed, tells the story of the assassination of Digna Ochoa. And she was a human rights activist and lawyer in Mexico who was assassinated in 2001. And there's some amazing material that she has. But first, we're going to hear actually from Digna Ochoa herself. This is a speech that she gave for Amnesty International in the year 2000. She was awarded the Enduring Spirit Award. This is one of her last interviews. About a year later, she was murdered. So she's a wonderful role model. And Digna Ochoa once said, "I've always felt anger at the suffering of others. For me, anger is energy. It's a force. You channel energy positively or negatively. Being sensitive to situations of injustice and the necessity of confronting difficult situations like those we see every day, we have to get angry to provoke energy and react. It's injustice that motivates us to do something, to take risks, knowing that if we don't, things will remain the same. The words of Digna Ochoa, human rights activist and lawyer from Mexico. And we're going to skip the music, I'm telling the engineer, and head right into that interview.
And with that, I am honored this night not only to receive an award, but to give one as well. The next award goes to a woman whose life embodies the enduring spirit concept, courage, which is the first virtue. Courage, as a human rights attorney in Mexico City, she endured countless brutal physical and mental attacks. Still, she fights on behalf of the Miguel Agustin Pro Juarez Human Rights Center. Persistence. She's been kidnapped and beaten and threatened with death, and has gone beyond threats with attempts on her life. Still, she persists as a tireless advocate for human rights in Mexico. Please join me as we honor the Enduring Spirit Award, and we give it to Digna Ocola y Placido.
Buenas noches. Gracias, Amnistía Internacional, por este reconocimiento y por el apoyo de la defensa de los derechos humanos y de los defensores en México, en particular al Centro de Derechos Humanos Miguel Agustín Pro.
Good evening. I want to thank Amnesty International for this award and the acknowledgement and support of the defenders of human rights in Mexico. In particular, Amnesty's support for the Human Rights Center, Miguel Agustín Pro.
Yo inicié la carrera de derecho con la ilusión de ayudar a otros, pensando que era suficiente conocer el derecho para lograr esa meta. Posteriormente descubrí que a causa de la corrupción e impunidad imperantes en México, no basta ser inocente, tener la razón y basarse en el derecho, sino que había que luchar en contra de toda una estructura de gobierno que defiende intereses políticos y económicos muy particulares.
I started my career in law with the dream of helping people, thinking that all it took was to know the law to achieve this goal. Later, I learned that due to the rampant corruption and impunity in Mexico, it was not sufficient to be innocent, to be right, and to have the law on your side, but it was necessary to fight against an entire government structure that defends very specific political and economic interests.
La experiencia y cercanía con la pobreza y la injusticia me llevaron a integrarme al Centro PRO, institución que fue fundada en 1988 por la Compañía de Jesús y que nació con el objetivo de la defensa y promoción de los derechos humanos.
My experience with injustice and my closeness to poverty brought me to join the Center PRO. This institution was founded in 1988 by the Jesuits, and it was formed with the goal of defending and promoting human rights.
En el Centro PRO hemos podido obtener justicia en casos específicos luego de grandes luchas contra la impunidad y la corrupción y un aparato de justicia que beneficia a aquellos que tienen dinero y que pueden pagarla.
At the Center PRO, we have been able to obtain justice in specific cases, but only after huge struggles against the impunity and corruption of a justice system that favors those with money who could pay for justice.
Por ejemplo, actualmente llevamos la defensa jurídica de dos campesinos ecologistas, Rodolfo Montiel y Teodoro Cabrera, que luchan por sus bosques y que a causa de ello tocaron intereses económicos, por lo que fueron detenidos ilegalmente y torturados por el ejército mexicano. Después de un año, el juez de la causa los ha sentenciado a 7 y 10 años de prisión respectivamente. En este momento nos encontramos en la etapa de apelación ante un tribunal unitario en la ciudad de Chilpancingo, Guerrero.
For example, we currently represent two peasants, environmentalists, Rodolfo Montiel and Teodoro Cabrera, who have been fighting for the forest in their region and as a result has disturbed some economic powers. They were illegally detained and tortured by members of the Mexican army. After a year, the judge in their case sentenced them to 7 and 10 years in prison, respectively. Right now, we're in the process of appealing to a circuit court in the city of Chilpancingo, Guerrero.
Paradójicamente, mientras en México a estos dos campesinos se les señala como delincuentes, en otros países reconocen su labor de defensa de los bosques, como fue la Fundación Goldman, quien les otorgó el premio Goldman, equivalente al Premio Nobel de Ecología, y Amnistía Internacional, que los ha reconocido como presos de conciencia, exigiendo su libertad inmediata e incondicional, además de otras organizaciones que han manifestado su apoyo y reconocimiento a la lucha por los bosques.
Paradoxically, while Mexico classified these individuals as criminal delinquents, other countries recognize their work in the defense for the environment. For instance, the Goldman Foundation, who gave them the Goldman Award, the equivalent of a Nobel Environmental Prize, and Amnesty International, who has recognized them as prisoners of conscience, demanding their immediate and unconditional release. Also, other organizations that have manifested their support and recognition for their fight for the environment.
Este trabajo de defensa y promoción a los derechos humanos ha traído como consecuencia que los miembros del Centro PRO en diferentes momentos hayamos vivido amenazas y agresiones, pero gracias a las convicciones que tenemos y especialmente al apoyo de muchas organizaciones nacionales e internacionales, hemos podido mantenernos firmes y continuar con nuestra labor. No ha sido nada fácil, pero estamos convencidos de que nuestro aporte es para la construcción de un México más justo y humano.
As a consequence of this work in the defense and promotion of human rights, the members of the Center PRO have been threatened and have been the target of aggressions. Thanks to our convictions, and especially to the support of many national and international organizations, we have been able to stand strong and continue our work. It has not been anything easy, but we are convinced that our work contributes to a more just and humane Mexico.
Nuevamente agradezco este reconocimiento a Amnistía Internacional y lo acepto en nombre de mis compañeras y compañeros del Centro de Derechos Humanos Miguel Agustín PRO, pues juntos hemos caminado y luchado al lado de muchos amigos con quienes hemos compartido esta vocación, incluso los momentos que nos han provocado dolor y sufrimiento. Gracias.
Once again, I would like to thank this acknowledgement by Amnesty International and accept it in the name of my co-workers at the Human Rights Center Miguel Agustín PRO, because we together have struggled and been with many friends with whom we share this vocation and many moments of pain and suffering. Thank you.
Welcome back to Bread and Roses. We've just been listening to a speech that the human rights activist and lawyer Digno Ochoa made at an awards banquet called, she won an Enduring Spirit Award in Los Angeles in the year 2000. not long after she was found assassinated, Digno Ochoa is made quite the waves in Mexico. She, Carrie Kennedy, who is the niece to America's, President John Kennedy, wrote a book called Speak Truth to Power, Human Rights Defenders Who Are Changing Our World. And after Digna died, was found dead, Carrie Kennedy said, "This is a terrible day, a terrible day." Once I asked her where she found the courage to defend cases when she herself had been tortured and she knew the consequences of her actions, she told me, "You know, it's because I'm angry. When I think about what they do to my people, my country, it makes me so indignant that I feel a sense of peace and calm, and I have the ability to confront whatever comes." And those are the words of Digna Ochoa. On the line now we have Linda Dybell, who is a three-time award-winning Amnesty International award-winning journalist in Toronto, Canada. She spent many years reporting on Latin America, has won many other prestigious awards, and has written a book, a fantastic book called Betrayed, The Assassination of Digna Ochoa. It's just out, and I recommend reading it. Linda, are you there?
Yes, I am, Carol.
Yeah, thank you for joining us this Friday night from Toronto, Canada.
Thank you. That speech was interesting because that was at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in Los Angeles. And she was in the United States in exile at that time because she had been kidnapped twice and had received so many death threats. And she was supposed to keep it toned down. You know, she was supposed to not make too many waves. And she stood up there at the Beverly Wilshire and denounced what was going on in Mexico, making herself even more of a target.
Can you tell our listeners just a bit about your interest in the whole story of Digna Ochoa and why you came out with this great, great book?
Sure. I was based in Mexico City for the Star as Latin American bureau chief, and very early into my time there, which was 95, I was there for about 7 years, I met Digna, and I worked with her on stories because she was very adept at alerting the press to particular abuses that were going on. And she was a lawyer. She was from the state of Veracruz, Misantla, and born into very rudimentary circumstances. Her family was poor. There were 13 in the family. And her father was a sugar mill worker who was also a political activist, a union leader. And when Digna was 16, he was arrested by police, tortured. He was disappeared for 3 days and thrown in jail on trumped-up murder charges. He was released after a campaign about 16 months later, but never declared innocent. And that and other things inspired Digna to go to law school. And what was really unique about her was she focused on alleged abuses by the army in Mexico, by the authorities of the state, the army, police, paramilitaries. And she took on cases of alleged rape, kidnapping, extrajudicial executions, and was, I believe, the only lawyer who has ever actually had a chance to question two soldiers on the witness stand in relation to to alleged torture, a torture that was shown by international rights organizations. In a case involving a U.S. company, it was actually Boise Cascade, and it was logging in the mountains of Guerrero. Local farmers had put up a roadblock to stop the logging, and some of them were arrested and then charged with other things.
And again, your interest in pursuing the story, Digna Ochoa was assassinated in 2001.
Yes.
And how long were you working on this book? And what drove you to really and do this very deep investigation into the murder?
Well, you know, I think if I had known what I was facing when I decided to do it, I may not have done it because it would have just been too daunting. But as I said, I had dealt with Digna many times, and in early 2000 I had actually written a piece, unfortunately a death foretold kind of piece, about the threats that she was receiving, about the fact that she had been kidnapped twice, she believed, by authorities of the state, And she didn't take that as that they were trying to kill her. She took it as a warning. And I used her as an example of what human rights activists are going through in Mexico. And then unfortunately that actually came true, that she was murdered. She was murdered on October the 19th, 2001. And I had been sent back to Washington. I had worked in Washington for 5 years before Latin America. And I had been sent back after 9/11. On a temporary assignment. And on that weekend, the Sunday after, I had gone up to New York City that weekend to pay my respects at the World Trade Center and to actually see what I had been writing about from Washington. I was on the train going from New York back to D.C., and I picked up, I think it was the L.A. Times, I was reading it on the train, and it said, Mexican rights leader murdered Digna Ochoa, and I was just... So at that moment, just felt so full of pain and rage. And what I thought about was the white blouses she always wore. And I imagined that, you know, that there was blood on her blouse, and would she be able to wear her blouse again, which is just a ludicrous thing to be thinking about. And I knew in that moment, I felt that I owed her. I felt that our lives had crossed, and that was what I had to do. But when I started to, so I went back, I was going back to Mexico anyway in a couple of months, and I thought that I was going to be investigating a murder, that I would show who her enemies were, I would show her importance to the human rights movement in Mexico, and she was well known in the States in human rights circles, and that would be it. That it would be a reasonably fast book to write, maybe it would take me a year. But I was barely into it a couple of months when in March of 2002, the case for cover-up, the whole scenario started to unfold, and I could see how it was going to turn out. And I found myself in the middle of a forensic investigation to show that there had been a cover-up, to show that Digna didn't commit suicide, which was the final ruling of Mexican authorities, and I think perhaps to redeem her memory, because they did their best to smear her. In effect, she was murdered twice.
The book is The Assassination of Digna Ochoa, Betrayed, and the author, Linda Dibel. Am I pronouncing your name right? I'm sorry.
It's Dibel. It's Dibel. But I'm very happy that you're pronouncing it at all, so I'm very happy to be talking about Digna.
And Linda is an accomplished journalist and quite well known in Canada, and has written this book, and really... you know, hopefully this will bring to light and get more people talking about what has happened. Is there any new developments in the case? I've only read to page 100, so.
Well, you know, the book is called Betrayed, the Assassination of Digna Ochoa, but it's also a celebration in many ways of her life, too. It's a love story, because she had a very interesting life. She had been a nun for 8 years, but left the order, the Dominican order, before taking her final vows. And while she was in the U.S., she met a guy who turned out to be a Mexico City math professor online in a club for a chat room for Spanish-speaking people 35 and over. She was 37 when she was killed. So, you know, it's a love story and a murder mystery, and I think a book about modern Mexican politics and just my love of the country. Last spring, a superior court in Mexico ruled that the case had to be reopened because two teams of police had ruled homicide. And then with the same evidence, this labyrinth developed of the cover-up story, and two other commissions ruled probable suicide, using material that was just absolutely bizarre. So last spring, a superior court ruled that the case had to be reopened because evidence had been ignored. For example, testimony of a U.S. psychiatrist, the fact that the body had been moved, which if you've committed suicide, it's pretty hard to move afterwards. But the order went back to the same prosecutors in Mexico City who made the probable suicide ruling, and they, in essence, announced that they weren't going to find anything new before they even started to investigate, and the case rather petered out last fall.
Oh, that's amazing. When you've just begun some of your book tours, and I'm wondering the reaction here in the States and perhaps in Canada. you know, we don't usually, when we think of Mexico, we don't usually think of death squads or tortures or people disappearing.
Yes.
Do you find that you're having to educate people about that, or is the book getting well received? Or
I've done so far just some appearances in places like Buffalo, but then last week I began with New York and Washington. I haven't been on the West Coast yet, but I've found that there has been a lot of interest in Digna, and I think surprise in some ways. I did a signing and a speech at a Barnes & Noble in the Village last week, and I think people are surprised that the idea of Mexico, you know, is a tourist resort. Millions of Americans go to Mexico as tourists, and they see the white beaches and the palm trees and a break. And yet behind this facade of a wonderful tourist place is this other Mexico where people like Digna are fighting very hard, in her case was fighting very hard, for human rights abuses to end, for the kind of massacres that have been going on in the 90s and into 2001 and beyond to stop. And it's ironic that the kind of thing that Digna fought against is happening in her case, or happened in her case. But, you know, I think hers is a very inspiring story, despite, to this point, the sad ending, because she's an inspiration that you can be born into poverty, that you can have very little, and just through the force of your personality and your strength and your character, and in her case, her anger, as Carrie said, that you really can make change.
I'd have to agree with that. I've had a terrible week at work. We're going through budget cuts, all sorts of things. And then I started reading about, you know, Digna Ochoa, and you think the things that we face in our day-to-day life and the things we struggle for, and you have an example of somebody who has had to overcome many obstacles to do the things that she did. She did some amazing human rights work under extraordinary circumstances in Mexico.
Yes, and she, you know, she was a... She was very brave, obviously. She wasn't a fool. She knew that her life was in danger. She had been kidnapped and raped by police officers when she was very young in Veracruz, when she was working in her first years as a lawyer, and this had to do with a blacklist that she had discovered, and then had been kidnapped twice, as I mentioned, in her final years. And she was very aware that by continuing the same kind of work that she was putting herself at risk. And I talked to her about that a few times. And, for example, she loved kids, but she said she didn't ever want to have children. She loved her nieces and her nephews, but she couldn't risk it herself because she didn't want to leave orphans. But at the same time, she really loved her life. She, as I mentioned, had a boyfriend. She had very good friends. She loved to party. She loved to you know, go out with her friends, I mean, for things like birthday parties. And she loved her country. When she was in exile in Washington, she was there for, I think, from August of 2000 to March or April of 2001. She just pined the whole time for Mexico. She found Washington very very cold, the climate very cold, even though for me as a Canadian it's balmy in Washington. And she wanted to go home, and she wanted to get back into the kinds of cases that interested her. And I once asked her if she wanted people, she wanted Americans and Canadians to boycott Mexico. Did she want them not to come and be tourists there, given that there's this whole other face of Mexico behind the tourist resorts? And she said no, that if people didn't go to Mexico as tourists, that the people who would suffer would be Mexicans who work in the tourist industry. And that was the last thing that she wanted. She just wanted people to be aware, you know, and this was when I did the story, Death Foretold, in January of 2000. She said that people be aware, you know, write their members of Congress, write their members of Parliament, talk to politicians, say that you want your government, whether U.S. government or Canadian government, to take a stand on human rights issues with big partners, trading partners such as Mexico. But for heaven's sakes, don't stop coming, she said.
Linda Dibel, I want to thank you so much for joining us on this Friday evening. I'm going to spell your last name. I can't say it right. So please, I urge all our listeners to check out this book. It's D-I-E-B-E-L, Linda Dibel. And the book is The Assassination of Digna Ochoa, Betrayed. And check out that book. You can also read about Digna Ochoa. I'm going to spell her first name. It's D-I-G-N-A. Ochoa is O-C-H-O-A. And you can do a web search for her. There's a lot of information on the Amnesty International website, et cetera, et cetera. So, Linda, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. It's just a travesty that they've ruled suicide and left this hanging the way it has. So I really appreciate the chance to talk about Digna. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for writing that book, because this is certainly this is how the truth is going to come out. It's folks like you that are searching and spent all those years writing. Investigating, so we can find the truth.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you. And we're going to take a little musical break. We'll be giving some websites at the end of this show. We were joined the first half of the show by a group called Amigos de las Mujeres. They're working with the families of the murdered women in Juarez, and these families are facing death threats because they want justice. And we just spoke with Linda Dibel, a journalist from Canada who's written a book called Betrayed. So stay tuned. I want to give some websites where you can get more information and think about some actions to help these women.
Is rising with people from every tribe, from China to Puerto Rico. We follow the same design. I travel this place with freedom. I say to the moon and sky, I can't stop the beast from roaming. The deepest fear, my desire, the deepest fear, my desire, the deepest fear, my
the music of Lila Downs. You've been listening to Bread and Roses. We've had a pretty full show tonight, and I wanted to just give you some websites. Amigos de las Mujeres is an organization in New Mexico that is working to aid the families of the 400 women and girls who've been killed or disappeared there in the past 13 years. Excellent organization. And that's amigosdelasmujeres.org. They suggest showing a film, Señorita Extraviada, by Lourdes Portillo, buying pins. Show a film, raise some money to help out those families, and her organization would do that. You can find out more information on the Amnesty International website. You can type in the website, Justicia para Nuestras Hijas. And the book we reviewed and talked to the author is called Betrayed. And the author is Linda Dibel, D-I-E-B-E-L. You can read more about Digna Ochoa. She's a human rights activist and lawyer a very brave woman who was assassinated in 2001, but not after living an incredible life, an inspiring story. And you can read more about her on the Amnesty International website. Thank you for joining us.